Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 226. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. Right next to me is John Lindemann.
What's up, everybody?
John is sharing his home with me these past couple of days. I'm visiting in Boston. My holiday travels are almost over, but I agree with you, John. I deserve an achievement for the Road Warrior.
You do. You definitely should unlock it.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sharing
God.
My home with you and also my heart, Tony.
Are we just going to go ahead and say the space between the two of them is called the Danger Zone or some other possible name for a gay bar? Because I'm just going to get it out there now.
There's a highway in between us, and it is called the Danger Zone.
Yes.
John, you are the Iceman to my crazy Tom Cruise.
Well, you know what? We should take off our shirts and go play some volleyball, buddy.
Oh, been there, done that. So, of course, you're also hearing the giggles slash groans of James Jones. And Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And we're so happy to be with you on another exciting 2011 edition of this fine radio program. Let's start with some new business. And, hey, Greg, you've been playing some kind of interesting stuff, some retro stuff.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say it's nice to hear the two of you together. I think John, for whatever reason, has been sounding kind of lonely lately, so it's good that he's got someone to keep him company at last.
The nights are cold here, gentlemen.
Well, yeah, I mean, just so long as we don't have any bad intentions, it's okay.
But my retro gaming continues apace. First of all, I've been playing more Pac-Man Championship Edition, quite a lot more of that, after I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Quite a few people on the email and TalkBack and stuff have been offering their PSN IDs burnish my friends list, so I've taken them up on that.
I got it for 360 just to spite you, Greg.
What does it matter? Do you think I'm shitting it at the thought of you breaking my score?
Well, he'd have to play the game to break your score, so it's a moot point.
Precisely. Thank you for illustrating that, James.
Pac-Man's going to be one of the first things I get when I get home, because I do really want to play it.
Yeah, I've been getting sort of sucked in more to the high score element of it now. Once you kind of realize how pathfinding, how identifying the most efficient path for score play or for time attack, which can be slightly different depending on the circumstances, you're waking up all the ghosts as efficiently as possible when the game's going at crazy speeds and it's almost really difficult to identify those turns on a second-to-second basis, is really intense. And inspires that just one more go kind of thing. So I'm definitely keeping on with that. But my very unusual sort of acquisition this week, once again going into the depths of Japan's PSN, which is far more flush with old games than its counterparts in the other regions.
And a scary place as well.
There are a few things that are incomprehensible when you're just looking at some random box art out of context. But I looked up some Sunsoft games because what they did on the PS1, very late in the PS1's life, like I think by the time the PS2 had come out, they released a series of discs that had a pair of classic NES Sunsoft games on each. And one of the volumes, volume 5, contains Euphoria, which is out on the Virtual Console in America and Europe, but not Japan, which I would ideally like for the 60 Hz of the progressive scan. And also Journey to Silius, which is this kind of Contra Mega Man kind of thing, closer to Contra than to Mega Man, but there's some similarities with Mega Man in terms of the way you use extra weapons, in that they have consumable ammo and you have to go to the bloody poor screen to switch to them. But it's pretty Contra-ish run and gun stuff. But Journey to Silius has a really weird history. I'm not entirely confident of this account of events, because it's pretty difficult to pin down the exact thing, but on the Japan version that I've got, it's not called Journey to Silius, it's called Wrath World. And my understanding is that first of all, you had this game, Wrath World, finished and done. And then what they wanted to do is, well, what they did to some extent is get the Terminator license and turn it into, it was already, you know, this sort of run and gun in a post-apocalyptic kind of environment with this blue Master Chief looking soldier guy. But then they were going to make some changes, turn it into a Terminator game, and sell it with that license. However, they then lost the license. So they made a few more changes, sort of back to being a bit more generic, and released it as Journey to Silius in the Western Territories. So it's kind of strange playing this version, wondering, you know, like how much of the similarities to Terminator are just purely accidental or in that sort of lovely Kojima really kind of plagiarism kind of way that he had going on in the 8-bit era. But, I mean, as a game, I think the thing that if you've heard anything about it, you'll probably be familiar with is that it's really hard. I've kind of struggling with it so far. I've just into the third level and it has like limited continues, which is a problem because it does feel like a bit floaty, a little bit loose in the like the jumping and the handling of the character. And you will die a lot. I mean, one of the harshest things that I think you've got in this game is the fact that if you get hit by anything over like a pit, it, to borrow a bit of Smash Brothers parlance, meteor smashes you into the pit and you're instantly dead. You've got to be so, so careful when you jump over anything with a gap in it.
Now, how many continues do you have? I mean, how many do you have and are they spread over the entire game?
Yeah, it's like three continues, three lives each. That's it. As far as I could tell.
That's harsh.
I don't think you can earn more.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if you die 9 times, you deserve to lose.
Do you know if they changed that in the Western releases?
I'm not sure.
Because I know this has been discussed as a candidate for Virtual Console with, you know, with Vic Ireland releasing some of the Sunsoft games like Euphoria and Blaster Master, etc. The name has come up, and I don't know if there are any concrete plans, but it seems like a game that I'd be interested in playing, but if it's that hard, that's kind of a turnoff.
Maybe if I keep at it, something's going to, you know, switch on, and I'm going to get a lot better at it. I don't know. But right now, it seems like a steep hill to climb. I mean, Blaster Master, does that have limited continues in America?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has unlimited continues in Japan. The version I've got has unlimited continues, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's the reason I've never beaten it. Because I can get really far, but I get to like world 5 or so, and I run out of continues. And then have to start from the very beginning all over again. It's just so soul-crushing. Mm-hmm. I never do.
Well, that's the thing with me. I was expecting that. I mean, I wasn't entirely sure, but that's what I thought you had said in the past when I bought it on Japan's Virtual Console. And then after a while, I realized, wait a minute, I've died loads of times. It's not happening. So in that case, Japan had the unlimited continues, which is probably a bad sign from the point of view that if the Japanese version of Journey to Silius doesn't have unlimited continues, the Western version probably doesn't either, I guess, unfortunately. But the one thing I did want to mention that's a bit sad about this version, I'd heard a little something about this, a little inkling about this issue before I picked it up, but I decided to sort of gamble a bit anyway, because a PS1 game is like 600 yen. So you're getting these two games for 600 yen, whereas an NES game is 500 yen on Japan's Virtual Console. And, you know, on the basis of the delay to Blaster Master, you know, that took ages to come out. I thought I'll go with this now, but the thing is the sound isn't quite right. They didn't nail the music at all.
Well, the sound's not right in the Virtual Console Euphoria either.
Yeah, well, that's because
it's the PAL version.
Yeah, they've taken the PAL version and futzed with it. This, I think, is just because when they emulated these NES games on PS1, they got it a bit wrong. And the key is, I think, the bass channel. It's just, you can kind of tell when you listen to it, it sounds a bit off. It sounds like something's missing. And then I went on YouTube and just pulled up some videos of the NES Journey to Silius running. It sounds so much better. Because that is something that Sunsoft's games are quite renowned for, is having really cool soundtracks.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely, you know, Journey to Silius in its full form qualifies as one of those. But, you know, the music's still kind of good, even in this diminished state. But sadly, these versions don't really accurately recreate that. So it kind of makes you realize, you know, just the one great thing about Virtual Console in general is that it is always accurate. You know, it's pretty much exactly how it was before, for better or worse, sometimes.
Yeah, and sound is one of the more difficult things to emulate, period. So I'm not surprised to hear that, but I guess, you know, really quickly, Greg, what do you think of Euphoria? Have you played that?
Yeah, I've played that the less of the two, just because, you know, it's been discussed before, but I mean, I like it so far. You know, it is kind of your sort of Super Mario 2 meets Metroid or something. You're very cute, very silly, and great animation for an NES game. I mean, I would say that of Silius as well, but not to the same extent. So they should be both pretty fun in the long haul, but it does. There is like one more Sunsoft collection I'm kind of thinking about, which has got the game Gimmick on it, which is this really rare because it only ever came out in Japan and Scandinavia. Bizarrely. but it's another kind of like very cutesy, but I think more of a traditional platformer, but also very cutesy, kind of like Euphoria. And a lot of people seem to think that's actually pretty good. So I'm kind of tempted by that maybe one day if I've got some Japanese PSN credit spare.
I wonder, is it possible to, I don't suppose any of those collections have Batman.
No, I don't.
I wouldn't think that they would, but it's too bad. Have you ever played Batman, the Sunsoft game?
No, I've heard lots about it. I always kind of fancied it.
It's really good. It was one of my favorite NES games when I was a kid. I didn't own it, but I think I had a friend who owned it so I could borrow it or something. I played a lot of it.
Right.
And it has great music, really good graphics. I mean, the only thing about it is it really has nothing to do with Batman, except he does have a batarang.
You wonder with that story about Journey to Silius and Terminator what it started as, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very clear that it was not really originally designed as a Batman game. It was at some point they had to apply the license to it. But nonetheless, it was the best Batman game until Arkham Asylum.
Hmm.
And it's still really good. And unfortunately, it's one of those games that's kind of lost to time because of licensing issues. And it's really too bad. If Warner Brothers has any control, I think they should pick it up and try to, you know, slap it on a disc with maybe Arkham City or something.
They made it. I mean, they made it work for the Turtles, the first NES game. But like that has been a very isolated case, and really, if we could pick one licensed game on the NES to bring out Virtual Console, I don't think it would be that one, would it?
No, it would be Yonoid.
Screw you, DuckTales.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, in all seriousness, probably DuckTales and then the MC Kids, as far as I'm concerned.
Oof.
James, have you played MC Kids?
Yeah, it's not oof in the game, it's just oof that game got made, really.
Oh, I know. I mean, the marketing-wise, it's disgusting, but game-wise, it's kind of awesome and radical. So
radical.
Just to use the parlance of the era.
Yeah, very, very well played.
There is some absolutely inexplicable bullshit on the NES.
Yeah, for sure. Now, James, you have a brand new game that I know our listeners are going to want to hear about, so I'm going to save you for the end.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
John, can you tell us briefly about what you've been playing? Well, we'll just talk about it together, because we played together last night.
Yeah, so I picked up, with some gift certificates I had left over from Christmas, I picked up a PlayStation Move controller, both the Wii Remote ripoff and the Nunchuck ripoff, because I figured I wanted the entire ripoff experience.
The wireless ripoff, thank you.
So
it's really just research for our website.
Yes.
He's absolutely just checking out the competition.
Yep.
No, seriously, why did you want this?
You don't have to make it so accusatory.
Well, there's a reason why I bought it with gift certificates. It's because it's something that I wouldn't have really bought myself. Really, I mean, I'm going to get Killzone 3, so I'm curious to see how Killzone 3 controls with Move, because supposedly it's actually done pretty well.
Hmm.
So that's ultimately why I got it, and I figured, you know, I really don't want to spend the money on it. So since I have gift certificates laying around,
it's not real money.
Well, okay. It's, you know, that's kind of what I use them for, stuff that, like, typically I wouldn't spend my hard-earned cash on.
So right.
I'll spend someone else's hard-earned cash on them.
Well, so the funny thing is, when we were playing it last night, well, the only game you've got for is the Little Big Planet thing, which is that free?
It's probably, as Greg has talked about, I'm a Plus subscriber, a PlayStation Plus subscriber.
Okay, it's free to you. It's quote-unquote free.
Yeah, so along with, you know, the women, the money, the hotels, you know, the hot tub.
All those things that you don't get, yes.
Yes, you also get the Little Big Planet. I think it's called Sackboy's
Prehistoric Moves.
Yes, you see, Greg's already jealous. He's already jealous.
I just have a memory, John. One day you still won't have it.
Yeah. I already don't.
I don't know that you should be jealous, Greg, from what we played last night.
Well, yeah, so the way, I mean, Move, I mean, you hook them up. There's, you know, with Nintendo, they kind of hold your hand through stuff and, you know, they show you how to do things. But, you know, when you buy these Move controllers,
they're not even assembled yet. They're in pieces. You have to put them together.
I mean, there's nothing like, you know,
it comes with a soldering gun.
Yeah, exactly. and glue, lots of glue. But I would think that, you know, as soon as you hooked one up, there would at least be some sort of demo that it would automatically go through or something to show you like what to do. Like, I couldn't even figure out how to like work the XMB because there's no D-pad on it. My first instinct was just, okay, well, I probably just flick it up and flick it left and right. Right. That makes sense. No, I figured out only after lots of trial and error that you actually have to kind of hold the Z trigger ish button, which I guess simulates grabbing the menu items or something. But there's no cue for you to do that whatsoever. And there's no instructions really on how to do that. I don't even think there's instructions in the actual instructions on how to go through on how to go through the XMB with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with John. Watching him put this thing in and try to fiddle around with it, it's not very intuitive at all. At least the setup for it. And then we finally got the game, and we didn't know this, but it turns out that this Little Big Planet download thing, it's really kind of a demo Move. And at first, you load it up, and it says push the PS button to start. And there's a PS button on the Move controller, and so we're pressing that, and nothing's happening.
Let me say that I was under the impression that since it was called Prehistoric Moves, that it would be a game entirely controlled by the Move controller.
Uh-oh.
Right. No, not the
that
case.
That was my first mistake.
Not the case at all. So when you push the PS button on the Move controller, it doesn't start the game. It brings up the cross-media bar, which is the opposite of playing the
Jesus.
Game. Yeah. So we're pushing every button on there. And I got to say, these Move controllers have a lot of buttons on them. They're really complex.
Yeah.
They've got buttons on the sides and on the bottom and on the top, and the buttons are kind of hard plastic. They're kind of stiff. Mm-hmm. We're pushing every button on there, and nothing worked. And finally, I'm like, well, maybe it means a PS button on a normal DualShock controller.
And I was like, no way. There's no way. Because, I mean, the only controllers that we had hooked up at this time were just the Move ones. Yeah. Which take up two slots, by the way. So controller one and controller two.
Because they're wireless from each other as well. So they're individual Bluetooth devices. So anyway, John turns on a DualShock controller, pushes the PS button, and sure enough, the game starts.
Mm-hmm.
So now we realize it's a two-player game only. It's only two players. You can't play it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so one person, in this case John, controlled Sackboy, moving him around with a DualShock. And I held the Move controller, and actually, you don't even need the navigation, the nunchuck thing. You don't need that at all. So I held the Move controller, and it's basically just a cursor, and you move it around, and you can drag things.
After
all this, we find out that this Little Big Planet thing is basically Nick's Quest, except it's supposed to be played by two people instead of one. And it's not nearly as clever as Nick's Quest, let me tell you.
Oh.
It looks nice. I mean, it looks like Little Big Planet. So it looks great. But it plays exactly the same as normal Little Big Planet, except you've got a second person holding their pink lollipop thing, pushing things and dragging pieces around.
Yeah, and some of the puzzles were kind of annoying. Like the one where you had to cover me, there was some like flaming rocks dropping down, and Johnny had to pick up a little shell and hold it over me as I walked across this bridge. And the shell, as rocks fell on it, got hotter and hotter, and so eventually, if I hit the side of the shell with Sackboy, Sackboy would die.
From inside
the shell where you're supposed to be protected.
We died two or three times there, even though we knew what to do and seemed to be doing it correctly, and I'm not really sure what we did differently when we finally made it through, so I mean, it's not a great showcase for the Move controller, because you're using it as a Wii pointer, basically, or as a mouse. It's nothing innovative at all.
Yeah, and not even in creative ways.
No, not really, no. So, not impressive. But you didn't get the pack with Sports Champion or anything else.
No,
that's the only thing.
I didn't get that, because, I already have the camera.
Dare I ask why?
It's all your judgment, wasn't it? Don't you remember?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, my years of playing that game. I mean, the other little thing, too, is when I first got them, I guess you have to pair them with the PS3, right? So, you just plug them in via USB. And so I was like, hey, okay, that makes sense. But bear in mind, I did have to look at the instructions to even figure that out, because they just weren't pairing. They weren't doing anything. They were just sitting there flashing. And so I opened up the instructions.
Yeah, PlayStation controllers don't have a sync button like a Wii Remote does under the battery case.
Well, technically they do, but it's a little dot that you can only hit with like a ballpoint pen.
Oh, okay.
So it's not an actual button you can press. Yeah, it's one thing after another. And so when I was trying to pair it, I pull up my USB cord, plug in the controller on one end, plug in on my fourth USB port, right? Because I have one of the old 60 gigs, and I think it has four.
It has at least four on the front, two or three on the back.
On the front,
it has
the
tons of USB.
And so I'm like, okay, I'll plug it into the one on top. Didn't see it. No idea. And, you know, to me, a USB port is a USB port is a USB port on my PS3. And so I'm like, okay, well, I have no idea what's going on. I'm thinking, obviously something must be broken because plugging it into a USB port should be the simplest thing in the world. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll try it on some other USB port. So I tried it in the third one, and sure enough, works like a charm.
Ugh.
No idea what the hell that means, but...
Is it possible that it's you plugged it into a USB port that the standard PS3 doesn't have anymore?
But that's, that I mean, that was, what I, that was what I thought, but...
But that would be moronic, beyond...
That is moronic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is why I didn't even consider it.
Oh, it's too stupid to consider.
Yeah, but yeah, so far, I mean, it's just a bunch of bother for really no benefit beyond, yeah, now you can play, you know, clones of Wii games.
I think the most interesting thing I've heard for Move is that new Echo Chrome.
Yeah,
yeah, and I was telling John he should try that out. Maybe there's a demo for that, because you can only play that with Move.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was the one actually using the Move while we played this, and I really wasn't all that impressed with it. It lost the cursor a few times.
Yeah.
It didn't feel more accurate than a Wii pointer, so I don't really know.
Now, this room is dinky, so maybe we were too close to the camera. I'm willing to give it that.
Maybe there's no overhead light, so that could be part of it too.
Who knows?
Yeah, but it wasn't a great experience, honestly.
No, not at all.
So I've got a couple things. Actually, while John last night, John has a really impressive game library, as our listeners probably know by now.
Pristine.
Yeah.
I've preempted it.
it's well presented.
Like a museum piece.
It's like a bookshelf full of game cases. And so we were scanning over that, and he's like, yeah, you know, if you see anything you want to check out, let me know, and, you know, we'll pop it in. And so I saw Killzone 2, and since, you know, I'd heard him talk about it, heard Greg talk about it, I've never played it before, I was like, I'd kind of like to see that, especially, you know, because of all the talk about the graphics. And so he popped that in and showed it to me, and I was a little surprised by the sort of cartoonish character design, because I thought it was meant to be like a really realistic-looking game.
You're probably expecting something more like Mass Effect, right? Like Mass Effect.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you see we watched the opening movie, and the character designs are actually a little bit cartoonish looking. I was surprised, but once you're in first person, and when he was actually playing the game, it looks more gritty. And
yeah,
I mean, I didn't actually play it myself. I don't know how interested I would be in it, but damn, that game looks really good.
Yeah.
Even like almost 2 years later now, I think it looks fucking amazing. So, and you know, in Killzone 3, I've heard that they're adding jetpacks, so I'm automatically more interested in that one, and I might actually give it a rent.
Mm.
And then while he was doing that, I picked up his DSi because that's a novelty unto itself for me. I'm not around DSIs very much. So I picked that up, and I just, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot on there. I played Dark World Zero back at PAX, but he had PictoBits on there, and I thought, oh, you know, I should try PictoBits. Everybody says this is, like, one of the best DSiWare games. It's an art style, which I like. And so I loaded that up and messed around with PictoBits for about 10 minutes and then put it down, and I don't really want to play it anymore. I don't know what the deal is, and I wasn't listening to the music. The
music is big.
Because you had Killzone on.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
So I was playing it muted, but gameplay-wise... I didn't really find PictoBits to be all that interesting or fun, so I don't know.
I would sit down with it and spend some time with it. I think I think it's something that I think right out of the box it probably doesn't. It's probably not that impressive immediately, but the more you play it and kind of get wrapped up in the Nintendo, you know, nostalgia of it,
sure.
And the music especially is really, really good.
All right. Well, fair enough. I might give it another shot. Maybe when 3DS comes out and I can download it for myself. You know?
Did you try Xscape?
I did try Xscape, and I don't know what the fuck's going on in that game.
It's a pretty abstract game.
Yeah. I mean, I love the look of it. I mean, I love weird, abstract-looking games, but maybe I need to go through the tutorial. I could not figure out how the control... Because I started out, and I was in this tunnel, and it looks like something straight out of the original Star Fox.
Yeah.
And, you know, these barriers are growing out of the walls, and I need to dodge those. And it felt like the ship or the tank, whatever I was in, because it's in first person.
Your tank.
Whatever I was in, it couldn't get to the opposite wall fast enough to dodge the barriers that were coming out. So I kept hitting barriers even though I was trying to dodge them. I don't know if there's something I need to do to accelerate or to... you know, to roll out faster, but I was getting pretty frustrated with that.
Well, the area that you're talking about is the one, that's what happens when you go in between planets. It's like this kind of interlude zone where it's just a 3D tunnel that you go through.
Yeah.
And then when you actually, you know, run around in the zones themselves, you know, you can, you know, shoot other tanks, I guess, and you can, like, jump off of obstacles and fly around. For
right.
A time.
And that's very, like, free-range Star Fox 2 or Star Fox 64 type stuff. And that was pretty interesting, but... a little overwhelming at first because I was getting shot at and I didn't know where from. And then I hit a ramp and suddenly I'm flying.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to control that. And I noticed that the way – at first I was like, okay, I can turn, but I don't know how to go forward. And finally I realized you just put – you just touch towards the top of the screen to go forward. Yeah. That doesn't feel great.
No.
I'd rather have a go button, gas pedal. Because, that I think you – is that kind of what you were referring to earlier?
I understand that now. I did not like the controls. I was like
– yeah, I understand that now.
They just – they don't feel responsive.
I agree.
Enough at all.
I agree. Yeah, it felt all very – felt very floaty. But I will say it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. It really – Xscape really does look very cool.
Yep.
And it reminded me quite a bit of the original Star Fox. Just, you know, higher res, a little bit cleaner looking, but definitely a very similar – that abstract – sort of flat-shaded geometry look of Star Fox. I think it's a really nice kind of follow-up to that.
Yep.
And then what I've really been playing the most of this past week, I've still been on travel, so it's kind of limited. I'm still playing a lot of Resiteer, which is very addictive. But I was in New York last week and happened to go by the Nintendo World Store. I meant to take Dragon Quest IX on tag mode or whatever, and I forgot that day. I ended up doing it the next day and never did find anyone to tag with. But
no.
This was the first time I've been there since 6 years earlier.
Since the infamous controller slamming incident.
So, yeah, I went to the Nintendo World Store, which had been renovated in the last 6 years since the last time I went there. And it looks really nice on the inside. And of course, because of the 25th anniversary for Mario, they've got all kinds of Mario stuff up there. There are two levels. The bottom level has mostly DS stuff and Pokemon stuff. And then there's a staircase up to the top, and then the top is mostly Wii stuff and like T-shirts and plush dolls and things like that. And the staircase in between has every like three or four steps has a different milestone in Mario's history. But of course it's all revisionist. Like, it doesn't include the lost levels or anything like that. So it's just the American version of the story, but it's still neat. There were a lot of people in there. A lot of people. Of course it was Times Square, or almost, not quite Times Square, but near Times Square at Rockefeller Center, near New Year's Eve. So there's a lot of people in New York, period. But it was definitely crowded. I didn't know if I was going to buy anything. I kind of had in mind maybe I'll look for a DS game since I'm kind of wrapping up The World Ends With You, and you know, I've still got some more travel to do. So I ended up going straight for Layton 3 and didn't even really think about it. I just picked it up and paid, you know, MSRP $30 for it. They're not going to have any deals in the Nintendo store. I got a really sweet bag for it, though, and I did look through the T-shirts. There were some pretty cool T-shirts and plush dolls and things like that, and I probably would have bought some of that stuff, maybe some for me, some for friends, but I was in Manhattan. I didn't have a backpack on me or anything, and I would have had to keep hold of it for like 8 more hours at a concert and around town. So I just didn't want to buy a bunch of bulky stuff that I'd have to carry around for the rest of the night. But there's some nice stuff in there, some very nerdy shirts. I mean, if you like buying nerdy T-shirts online, you really should go to Nintendo World Store because they've got some stuff there that's pretty killer. But yeah, I got Layton 3. I've been playing it on various subways and Amtrak trains and et cetera. So I've had a few hours. I've put in like 4.5 hours. And, you know, it's kind of like James said earlier in the year, it's Layton. It's more Layton. And that's fine. I skip the second one, Diabolical Box. So for me, there's a few things that probably aren't brand new, but it feels like they've refined the series, but in some very subtle, minor ways, you know. So it's just a few little things in the UI. I feel like there's a little bit more animation and more voice acting in this one than I remember in the first game.
There is.
And I think James was correct in the when he talked about the nature of the puzzles and the fact that they're a little bit more fair. There's not as many trick questions. That from what I've seen so far, that is true. I would say, though, the puzzles are certainly difficult, challenging, sometimes surprisingly so. Some of these I've looked at and I've worked it out in my head. I've taken the notes. I feel like I've done it pretty good justice. I feel like, okay, this is definitely the right answer. And I put it in there and it's not. And then when I buy a hint or something like that. And when I find out what is the right answer, I'm surprised at how complex it is and how difficult it is to intuit. But anyway, yeah, Professor Layton 3, it's nice. I like the future thing. I will say that the story goes crazy pretty early on.
Yeah, yes, it does.
I mean, clearly it's sort of science fiction based right from the very onset, but then it gets even crazier from there.
Oh, yes.
I just passed the part that James, actually I'm on the puzzle that James mentioned where you construct a machine gun from slot machine parts. and they actually like this, they fit this into the story. There's this shootout in a casino. It's like, come on. It's insane.
He built it while hiding behind a poker table. Yes.
Yeah.
McLean.
It is very MacGyverish, but the story is really nuts, but it's fun. It's fun. And, you know, I think if you've liked the previous Layton games, you're definitely going to enjoy this quite a bit. And it does make me kind of, you know, just, I love the graphics. I love the presentation, the music and the art design and everything. And, you know, knowing that that 3DS game that they're making is apparently going to be in, like, real-time 3D with polygons and everything, I'm really kind of curious to see more of that, see how all these characters look in 3D.
Oh, I mean, we've seen some video, so I mean,
I haven't personally seen it. I could have back at E3, but I never did play that.
I mean, they've released some video too.
Oh,
so I mean, we kind of know what we're dealing with.
Okay, I need to check that out because it's good stuff. You know, it wouldn't be in my top list of games from 2010 just because it is pretty much the same thing as the first Layton game, but it's still really well done. So if you want more Layton, this seems to do a nice job of it. And now we come to James.
Yes, who's gone completely insane in terms of games the last
yeah,
week.
For real, man.
Well, I had a week off, so, you know, I made good use of it.
So you donated 20 hours to charity and
mm-hmm. did some volunteer work in his community.
Got in some travel.
Well, I couldn't travel, unfortunately, so... Yeah. I took that one out.
Read some Tolstoy.
Mm-hmm. Got back on the weights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I did do that. But, all right, I'll start with a game I picked up on the Steam sale. So, recently I've had this desire to play a relatively deep strategy game. The last one I played was the last Total War title. And I don't think my computer is going to be strong enough to handle the next Total War title. So, I've been looking for something to fill that void. And
so, you got StarCraft 2?
No. on real strategy, not Bum Rush.
Zerg.
Oh. What I downloaded was Europa Universalis 3, the demo.
Of course.
Which is not actually much of a strategy game, but I dumped a few hours into it and found it reasonably compelling. And I went and bought the full version because it just happened to be on Steam sale. And I wasn't looking for it. I just saw it listed under the Steam sale days splash page. So I just went, well, it's $5. How bad could it be?
So if it's not strategy, then what is it?
So the entire world essentially is divided into regions, historical regions. And then they're grouped into states based on whatever time period you're playing in. You can go from 1087 to the end of the French Revolution. I'm kind of washing on what year that is. But the game basically puts you in charge of a state in the middle of Europe mostly, but you can play in other places. And you have to try to get through being a leader of a state in Europe when essentially everything around you is about primed to explode. So you manage production in your territories. You build your armies and send them off to battle, but you don't actually get to control the battle. It's all dice rolls. And you play politics.
It sounds like Civ.
It's a lot like Civ, but it's the politics is much more nuanced and there's a lot more players involved. So right now, like one of the games I was playing as the Kingdom of Bohemia in 1397, I think is when it started. So it's part of the whole Roman Empire. So everything just goes nuts from the word go. And after about 20 years of game time, you go, wow, this is a lot like real Europe because every state has allied with every other state. So anytime you do anything, sparks some giant World War I style conflict. It's really hard to accomplish anything in a game like this unless you're like a superpower because anything you do essentially gets you murdered. Pick on like the tiniest state in the world, everybody comes knocking at your door to destroy you for it. It's an interesting experience as a game, but I'm not sure that it's going to be very compelling to even people who like strategy and management games because there's a lot of not doing anything, just you know, making sure construction's going and making sure resources are being allocated properly.
Yeah, I feel like the people who make a game called Europa Universalis 3 have a pretty good idea of what their fan base wants.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily going for the broader market.
No, and the game actually has like 7 add-ons. It's something completely insane like that. Jeez. So the Steam version is called Complete, which is in fact not complete. It's missing 2 add-ons. But it was complete at the time they released Complete, let's put it that way. But what I found is even racing up the tech tree, which I did because I basically said, you know what? It's too hard to make money right now. I'm just going to give myself a ton of money. And the whole game is incredibly moddable. Everything's stored in text files, so you can mod it as much as you want. I basically just gave myself a complete ridiculous sum of cash and still can't manage to break through the deadlock that is European politics of the 14th and 15th centuries.
Who can among us?
I agree.
The next game I played, which is completely related, there's actually a tangential relationship there. For my winter break game, I picked up Eternal Sonata for the Xbox, which is an RPG that Namco put out 3 years ago. And the only reason I picked it up was we had a conversation about Tri-Crescendo, I think it might have been off the air, just kind of tangentially. And I looked at this game, and it listed all these reviews it had as being a good, maybe not great title, but it's a weird game because the entire game is set in the fever dream of a dying Friedrich Chopin. I mean, how this game came into being, I really don't understand. Keeping in mind that Tri-Crescendo itself, as a company, was originally founded to produce music and audio for Namco until they started producing their own games.
Don't they make the Star Ocean series?
I think they might have made one. They made the Baten Kaitos games.
Wait, but I thought that was... Monolith Soft?
Co-produced.
Oh, co-produced. Okay.
Yeah, but originally they were founded by the audio engineers over at the other Namco Bandai RPG studio, Tri-Ace.
Tri-Ace, oh.
To produce music for Tri-Ace.
Okay, so I might be getting Tri-Ace and Tri-Crescendo confused.
It's basically the same freaking people.
Okay.
But eventually Tri-Crescendo started making their own games. What's interesting about this game is that it suffers from its own bizarro story. It's kind of interesting how it weaves in the character whom is dying and having a fever dream, Chopin, into its own story and sort of explains his history. But the game itself is kind of just whacked.
Well, it's a Japanese RPG.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But even by that standards. But even at the conclusion of the game, I'm like, why did this happen? Mm. What was the real resolution here? And there really wasn't one, but... Be that as it is, it also suffers from some really frustrating puzzles and dungeons that are essentially unsolvable, and I had to look up the solution to them. And the first thing the walkthrough says is, this is the worst dungeon ever. I'm like, oh, fuck, really? it took me like 25 minutes with the walkthrough to get out of a dungeon, just because it was just so hard to get through it because of the puzzles. The combat system, though, is really where the game is kind of interesting because it combines the real-time stuff that Namco uses in a lot of their RPG battle systems with turn-based stuff. So essentially, you get to control a character for a fixed amount of time, and every character on the battlefield gets turns, and their turn starts when they start moving, and essentially, once that time's up, it's the end of their turn. So you can, as many actions as you can get out during that time frame, be it movement or combat, is essentially how much you get to accomplish. So positioning people on the field to either keep them safe and out of the range of other enemies or to make sure they're close enough to the action they can get involved is kind of an interesting twist of strategy you have to keep in mind, because if you're way over there on the other side of the screen, you're not going to get them there in time. What it does do, though, is it kind of expands nicely from scope, so you do get to experience more game as it goes on. It's also, no one's a lot to say about it. It's a really pretty game.
What about how it uses Chopin's music?
Yeah, well, it's really. Yeah, I was getting ready to say, it's a very, visually, it's a very, very attractive game. It looks like a Baten Kaitos title, but in HD, with more detail. Mm. And the backgrounds aren't fixed in place like they were in Baten Kaitos. They move. But the music is where the game gets weird.
Well, and for people who don't know much about Chopin, and James, you're probably much more knowledgeable than I am in this regard, but my understanding is that Chopin was one of the first European composers to really focus on the song format as opposed to symphonies and concertos. Yes. And so a lot of his music is more short format, which seems like it would work better for modern media-like video games.
Right.
Rather than try to fit in some piece of a Beethoven symphony sure. into your game soundtrack.
Well, and his music was more focused on not literally lyrics, but lyricism. Mm-hmm. He was the heyday of the Romantic era composer. most of his music is heavily piano leveraged. It has an emotional dexterity that a lot of music from previous generations doesn't have. It tries to tell a story through music, and a lot of it sort of revolves around the story they tell about his life growing up, which is that as a Polish citizen under Russian occupation, he was basically driven out of the country by his own friends because they knew there was going to be a rebellion and that he'd probably get killed in it. So he went to Austria, and where he became somewhat famous as a musician, but because he was a Pole, he was discriminated against there. And then he went to France, where he basically spent the rest of his life and became incredibly famous because France was basically a Polish ally.
So this stuff is worked into the...
Yeah, they actually have these breaks where they explain his life, and they pick music from that period of his life that he wrote then. And a lot of times you can see how his music reflects the emotional mood he was in and at that point in his life. What's strange, though, and his music is very, like I said, it's very piano focused, and I'm not a pianist, so I'm not super experienced playing his stuff. But what's interesting is that they took this romantic composer and they handed over the composing duties to this game to Namco's in-house person, Sakuraba, who writes prog rock inspired by Baroque themes, which doesn't match at all. And the music pretty much sounds like stuff straight out of every other game he's ever composed, which is a little bit depressing. There are a handful of compositions that he actually does do a good job expanding his scope, and it's probably one of the stronger composing efforts that they've done, but still, it just doesn't fit.
Is this the same person who did the music for Bonkaitos?
He's the same person who does the music for everything Namco does.
Okay, because I mean, I haven't played Bonkaitos either one, but I've always heard very strong things about the music.
Oh, it's got a great soundtrack, but it sounds like a Bonkaitos soundtrack. It doesn't sound like something that's being inspired by the fever dream of a romantic era composer.
Well, why don't you tell us about your big Nintendo platform debut?
Yeah, so I got today, I don't have a whole lot to say about it. I got our review copy of Ghost Trick, which I haven't gotten to put a whole lot of time into because it's still a relatively puzzling game. But basically, I've played the E3 demo again, and I'd forgotten how to solve some of the puzzles, so I got a little bit lost and a little bit in the middle. So really, you can consult what I said about Ghost Trick back then because it's essentially all I've done so far. Mm. But as a finished package, you know, it's been a reasonably enjoyable experience thus far. There was one frustrating puzzle that wasn't included in the E3 demo that really shouldn't be as hard as it was. But once I realized that how much timing is everything in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
because these things happen in real time.
Yeah.
Sort of. You can freeze it, but...
Yeah, there was an instance where you had to cause the button to get pressed. And then you had to react very quickly to the fact the button's acting because almost immediately two characters start talking and Sissel can no longer move once they're talking. So you have to watch the stupid chat scene again. So I kept pressing the button thinking, okay, why can't I move off of this thing? Because I was waiting till they were done. And then I realized I have to hit the button immediately afterwards before they start talking and then I can move. So I probably lost 10-15 minutes on that escapade of stupidity.
And we should tell people, I don't know if we've mentioned this earlier, but there is a demo of Ghost Trick on the Nintendo channel.
Yes, and it's probably this. It's probably as far as I've gotten.
Well, no. It's actually, I think, a bit smaller than the E3 demo.
Oh.
It's only the part with the girl and the headphones and the dog.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same demo that I played on the Japan Nintendo channel.
But it's very good, and it you know, you get to see the awesome rotoscope graphics of Ghost Trick.
Yeah. Oh, the game looks awesome.
Yeah.
It really does. The amazing thing about how the game looks is how smoothly everything's animated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easily the most smooth animation on the DS. What I've noticed about the game, having sat down and played it for an extended period of time versus in E3, is that it feels like it should be a more relaxed game because it feels like other games that Shu Takumi's made. But it really isn't because, like Johnny noted, it's in real time. So if they say she's going to die in 4 minutes, it's not she's going to die, you know, once you click through enough text dialogues. It's she's going to die in 4 minutes.
Yeah, that does set it apart from Phoenix Wright a lot.
Yeah, you need to act. You don't have time to really sit there and think too much.
James, do you think eventually we might get Ghost Trick versus Professor Layton or...
Ghost Trick versus Professor Layton versus Wright? Yes. Yes, we'll get that. We'll get all three in one game. It's going to be unplayable, but they'll all be in it.
Eventually, they could make their own, you know, like Marvel versus Capcom type thing.
I wouldn't be surprised
just with all of these characters.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if one of the last characters announced for MVC 3 is Sissel, because I mean, Phoenix Wright's in there. They put I put Mike Hagar in there, for God's sake.
Don't diss Mike Hagar.
But of all the random people they could have pulled out, Mike Hagar.
No, he's not random. He's awesome.
Yes, he
out
is.
Out of the blue.
He's Jesse Ventura, basically.
He is.
He is spinning pile driver.
Yep.
He's Jesse Ventura with more steroids.
He's spinning clothesline.
So yeah, hopefully I'll have more to say about that. Well, I mean, I will have more to say about that next week. Like I said, it comes out on Tuesday, so this is really my only chance to talk about it before it's already out.
Mm.
It comes out, like Greg says, it comes out Friday in Europe.
Yeah, same week, so hopefully if I get a bit of early shipping going, I might have been able to put in a little bit of time before next week as well. But yeah, it could end up being pretty much where you are, which would be kind of redundant. We'll see.
So Greg, how did you enjoy the first two chapters that I've already played?
And then I'll just open my mouth and play James on the MP3 player.
Alrighty. Well, so that's new business, and now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will review our 2010 predictions to see what came true and what did not. And then we'll lay out some predictions for 2011. Catch you on the flip side. Stick around.
And now for something completely abhorrent.
Regulators. You regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up!
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the street, trying to consume some skirts for the eve, so I can get some funk. Just rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweet. All you skirts know what's up with 213.
So I hooks a left on 2-1 and Lewis, some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the ride and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some gats, so I said, I'm stuck.
Since these girls peeping me, I'm gonna glide and swerve. These hookers looking so hot, they straight hit the curb. Won't you think of better things than this horny trick? See my homie and some suckers all in this mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Lindy's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next?
Yeah, my homie hemmed up and they all around, ain't none of them going straight pound for pound. I gotta come up real quick before they start to clown. I best pull out my strap and lay them busters down.
They got guns to my head, I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town. If I had wings, I would fly. Let me contemplate. Glanced in the cut and I see my homie Nate.
16 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make some bodies turn cold. Now they dropping and yell, it's a tad bit late. Nate Dogg and Warren G had to regulate. Bust is down, I let my gat explode. Now I'm switching my mind back into freak mode. If you want skirts, sit back and observe. I just left a gang of those over there on the curb.
Now they got the freaks, and that's a known fact. Before I got jacked, I was on the same track. Back up, cause it's on. N-A-T-E and me, the Warren to the G.
Just like I thought, they were in the same spot. In need of some desperate help. The Nate Dogg and the G-Child were in need of something else. One of them dames was sexy as hell. I said, ooh, I like your size. She said, my car's broke down and you seem real nice. Would you let me ride? We got a car full of girls and it's going real swell. The next stop is the East Side Motel.
Tweaking into a whole new era. G-Funk, step to this, I dare ya. Funk on a whole new level.
Rhythm is the bass and the bass is the treble.
Chords, strings, we brings melody. G-Funk, where rhythm is life and life is rhythm.
If you know like I know, you don't wanna step to this. It's the G-Funk era, funked out with a gangster twist. You smoke like I smoke, get high like every day. And if your ass is a buster, 213 will regulate. And we're back. So sometime around this time last year, we did our 2010 predictions. And, you know, I thought, of course, being that time of year, it'd be good to follow that up and give our 2011 predictions. But I also wanted to go over and just see how accurate or inaccurate.
This was mandated, wasn't it? You know, we had originally the predictions were sort of suggested by someone who wrote in. And they said, you know, the year after, you've got to look back.
Yeah.
See how wrong they were.
Oh, they were
and
very
we
wrong.
And we delivered in
yes,
wrongness.
We did. Oh, yes. So I'm going to summarize these, and if you any of you have comments, feel free to chime in. But right. Last year, this was on episode 178. I listened back through it and recorded and took notes on all of our predictions. And to the best I could figure, this is a pretty complete list. So for the Wii software schedule, I think we all kind of expected Sin and Punishment 2 to arrive in late spring, and that ended up happening a little bit later, sort of midsummer.
It was later in the States. It was oddly earlier, like much closer to late spring in Europe when it came out in May.
That's true. Yeah, but for Mario, we had a split. Johnny, that being myself, and Greg both thought Mario would be early summer, and James said, no way, holiday. And Greg and I were more right on that front. Because when did Galaxy 2 come out? May?
Yeah, May in the States, June in Europe.
I think that qualifies as early summer or late spring. So.
Definitely not holiday. That's so wrong. Yeah.
oh, just wait because I beat you all by months later. It's coming.
For Metroid, we seem to be all on board with a consensus that it would be arrive in late summer. And, of course, that was exactly correct. It was originally planned for what was it July and then it was delayed until August.
Yeah,
one of those short delays where it's very unlikely they did anything meaningful.
Yeah, it was
apparently
like a month.
We knew Nintendo's mind better than they did because they ended up in our slot despite kind yeah. of maybe going a little earlier to originally.
I think that extra month is actually when they wrote the story. On Zelda, as we all know, there was quite a schism on Zelda, so. John, you didn't seem to be very assertive on this release.
Fence it up.
Well, I thought, I remember for Mario, I did think it was going to be summer.
Okay.
Definitely.
And then, yeah, and then for Zelda, of course, Greg and I both really thought this was going to be a holiday game for Nintendo. Holiday 2010, yeah. James was like, no way in hell, Zelda never comes out on time, it's definitely going to be 2011. And as we hear about every week, James was correct.
I'm worried. I might not be correct. It might be 2012 by the time they're done.
Well, save that thought. Save that thought. We'll get to our predictions for this year.
I might be wrong yet.
Now, if you remember around this time last year, we knew that the 3DS existed. There had been some leaks. So this was a very hot topic. It's ripe for speculation. So we were talking about that quite a bit. I predicted that it would be announced before the end of the year in Japan, but not elsewhere, and that pretty much proved to be true. They did announce the Japanese release date details and a lot of other the price and a lot of other things about it before the end of 2010, but not in Europe and North America. Of course, that's coming up on January 19th. Mm-hmm. Greg predicted that the initial reveal would be geared to Nintendo fans with a virtual handheld service. Excellent, right on point. That, of course, turned out to be true. John predicted that the online component would be expanded. Now, this is a bit of a gray zone, actually, because what we know as of right now is that the 3DS has a lot of local wireless upgrades over the original DS. We still do not know very much at all about the online
capabilities. We do know that you can go online from a game. Like, you can actually go to the internet while playing a game.
You bring the internet browser okay. up.
So that does imply they're going to do something more significant than that god-awful browser on the DSi.
Yeah, no specifics, though.
Yeah, we really don't know very much at all about the online components.
Yeah, even in terms of hardware, I don't think they really...
I would say it's a reasonably safe assumption, but that, I mean, it's a reasonably safe prediction, too, so...
Mm. Sure, that it will be expanded in some way, yes, I agree.
That they won't make it as terrible.
Now, a little bit riskier, John and myself both predicted some kind of WhisperNet online access. This was kind of a out-on-a-limb thing. Probably not true. I guess we at this point we can't say for sure that this is not going to be the case, but
if Nintendo was holding this back until the 19th, it would be a hell of a secret to hold on to. If they were going to announce this, I feel like they already would have done it.
It probably would have already leaked anyway, because they would have had to ink so many deals to make it work.
Right, especially in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are doing a lot of sort of content delivery deals in Japan for TV shows and stuff, but you still have to get an actual Wi-Fi connection to get those.
Are they going
to
do like Spot Pass stuff with more, just getting more hotspots in Japan, but how that's going to apply to everywhere else is really an open question.
It's McDonald's. McDonald's and Starbucks. So, and then we all predicted, I have everyone here predicting that there would be physical media for the new DS, which is a pretty safe assumption. And that we've seen the new cartridges or the new game cards. They look pretty much like the DS game card, except there's kind of a little flange out on the top edge. Yeah, so that they won't physically fit into an original DS. So, in other words, it's not going to be like the PSP Go where it downloads everything.
The PSP Stop. Yes.
I was hoping for UMD drive, but it didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, they decided not to license that hot technology.
We're out a little liquor for it.
So, and then we had a number of individual predictions, and these could kind of be about anything. These were non-themed. So Greg predicted that Retro's next game would not be coming until 2011 and might be an open world title. And, of course, he was wrong on both accounts there, with Donkey Kong Country Returns coming out in November of 2010.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and spoil and say we didn't do so hot in this next category.
No.
Well, collectively.
Most of these are – well, there was a lot of speculation on Retro's next thing. Because who could predict Donkey Kong? Really?
Only if you worked at Retro.
Well, I think the point is that what you'll see in the theme of all these predictions is that the idea behind what would Retro be doing next was underpinned by an assumption that it would be something unique to their skill set, that only something they could do for Nintendo, that Nintendo's other internal teams or their other sort of associates that they like to go to for development couldn't produce, which, a side-scrolling platform of Starry Donkey Kong is something that their internal teams very much have produced before.
They've got a little bit of experience with side-scrollers, I think.
So, that was a real shock. Because remember, when they Retro exists to a large extent because they were, putting together a studio that had expertise from where they came from. From Iguana.
From Turok, primarily.
Like first-person game stuff that Nintendo had no knowledge of. And, so you kind of just follow that thought through over the years, but clearly that's kind of a distant memory at this point.
Yeah, and who could have predicted that Nintendo, not that we knew anything about Kirby, but if you had told me this time last year that Nintendo would release one new sort of 2D platformer for Wii, I wouldn't be that surprised, because obviously New Super Mario Bros. Wii did quite well. But if you told me they'd be releasing two before the end of the year in two different classic franchises, I would have been pretty shocked.
If you had told me they were releasing one, I'd have said, oh, look, New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Yeah, right. So I thought that Retro's game would be some kind of Western-style RPG. Not the case, obviously. John thought that it would be a first-person shooter.
I thought that was a lock.
So far, John's about as close as we get at this point.
Yeah, that was not to be the case either. I thought that there would be a major first-person shooter for Wii in 2010. I think that did turn out to be correct with GoldenEye.
Yep.
That's a game that we did not know existed back then, and I don't know how well it sold. I don't think it was a massive success, but in terms of being a major first-person shooter, I think that qualifies pretty well.
An exclusive.
Yeah, a major Wii exclusive, yeah. So I feel pretty good about that one. John thought that Valve would launch a Team Fortress 2-like game on the Wii in 2010.
Almost happened, not quite.
I don't know where that came from.
Almost. But what standards do we mean? In that Valve still exists and the Wii also still exists?
Yeah, that's right.
James thought Xenoblade will be at E3 but not released outside Japan in 2010. And the second half of that turned out to be quite correct.
In reality, it won't be released anywhere.
Well, no, it's out in Japan, it was not shown at E3. And I don't think it's going to be at this year's E3 either.
I don't think it's going to be at any E3s ever.
No, probably not. Well, it was at that one E3 when it was called Monado.
Yeah.
There was a video of it a couple years ago. But yeah, unfortunately, Xenoblade seems to be a Japan-only thing right now. James thought that Project Sora will reveal some kind of crossover game in 2010. And I guess by that you were meaning some Smash Brothers type.
Yeah,
thing, right.
I went as nebulous as I could on that one.
Well, there was also the mention that it might use someone else's property.
Yeah,
which didn't really. Anyway, they're making Kid Icarus for 3DS. So.
Yeah.
Which is not a game that no one else in Nintendo could make, despite their claim.
No, I don't think so. But, you know, we still don't know that much about Kid Icarus. And that,
it's Sin and Punishment. We know quite a bit about it.
I have a feeling that there will turn out to be more to that game than we've seen so far.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
And that is probably not a 3DS launch game.
No, it's not. It definitively is not.
Okay, so that may be coming out much later in the year, and there could be really a lot to it. We'll have to see. Anyway, James said, Pikmin 3 is dead. Well,
maybe?
Miyamoto seems to say that they're still doing something.
Yeah, but
they're also,
quote, still doing that Kirby game.
Yeah.
It's Pik Nukem Forever at this point.
Pikmin Forever. Pikmin Forever.
I mean, the only kind of movement we had, I think relatively shortly after James would have said that, we did that episode, I think Miyamoto was accepting a BAFTA fellowship here in Britain, just randomly blurted out, Pikmin's still coming, by the way, so don't go crazy.
Yeah, I think if he was in a coma, he would just kind of wake up for, you know.
Pikmin.
He's Pikmin! He would wake up screaming, and that was it.
Does Sonny and Cher still have that stupid show?
but then we'll find out Pikmin was actually the name of his sled. That's what he was talking about the whole time.
There's been some other vaguely reassuring noises and indications that it would be for Wii, not for 3DS, to kind of move us on to my part of it.
Well, yes, the next prediction was that Greg said Pikmin 3 would be for the new handheld. That is still a possibility. We don't know. I don't know.
The only indications we've got are to the contrary, but it's so nebulous right now, I guess you can't rule that out.
And since when do we take Nintendo's nose as gospel?
So I predicted that... that there would be a 2.5D Wii exclusive Castlevania from Igarashi. And oddly enough, there did end up being a new 2D Castlevania game for Xbox from Igarashi, but it wasn't for Wii. It wasn't really 2.5D either. Although
no, because 2.5D would involve new assets.
Yes, indeed.
He didn't say it would involve new assets.
You know, I actually, this one I will carry over for 2011. I still think this is a possibility.
But what about 3DS? I mean, are they going to... I want to see that same Flea Man sprite in 3DS vision.
Okay. James predicted that there would be an art style collection for retail by Skip Limited, and that's too bad. That would have been pretty cool, actually.
The thing is, there's a slightly weird way which this was a near miss, in that didn't they have the Art Academy game as a retail game after they'd released bits of it as DSiWare?
They did.
Are we going to give them credit for
No, but I just wanted to point that out.
Give them a half point for it.
I don't think he would... He didn't say Art Academy, he said Art Style.
Did Art Academy games even exist yet at that point?
No.
That would have been impressive if I predicted that.
Just from the general point of view of bundling together previously, they kind of did the opposite originally, like stuff like where they diced up games like Brain Training and put little bits of them on DSiWare. Well, they did do that in reverse for something, so James was onto something.
Fair enough. Pretty close. Let's see, this was from James, predicted that there would be a new Mario Party with Motion Plus and Balance Board support in 2010.
Now, what I love about this is that obviously we had Wii Party instead of Mario Party, and yet no Motion Plus on that.
No. It was the most unambitious party game they could have announced.
Because we forgot that Nintendo basically aborted the Wii Motion Plus post-birth.
It got pretty much blanked. Last year, didn't it? Apart from Fling Smash, which was not always a Motion Plus exclusive. That kind of happened later.
Yeah, it wasn't, because it wasn't Motion Plus exclusive at E3 09.
And finally, this was a kind of a dumbass one, but hey, you know, I was trying to do something exciting. I predicted that Wii HD would be announced in Japan after Christmas, but before the end of the year, and that HD might actually have kind of a double meaning involving a hard drive. And, no.
Probably shouldn't give yourself predictions that only have a 6-day window to come true.
Yeah, you have a point there, James. You have a point.
Tactics, my friend.
But, I mean, in my defense, I mean, traditionally, Nintendo does often announce things in Japan after Christmas.
Or like, really close to it. Like, DSi was pretty close, but I don't think it was after.
So now, anyway, obviously, we didn't do that great on our predictions last year.
So go ahead and skip the next 30 minutes.
Yeah, but it's time for new predictions. So I want to start with Greg, because I feel confident that Greg has thought this through meticulously and has something really rational and logical and just inevitable to throw on the table.
F-Zero MMO?
For DS?
That's pretty hot. I don't know. I'm going to kick this off. It's kind of more of a hope than an outright prediction.
You and your hope, Greg.
A false hope.
You get crushed every time.
Look at the London sky. There is no hope.
There's as much hope as there is in Mordor. But Next Level Games. If you're not familiar with these people, they are a development studio based in Salmon Arm, Canada, who made the Mario Strikers games and Punch-Out for Wii.
I believe, didn't they make Iron Man 2 this year?
Well, this is what I was coming to. I hope, and let's say predict for the purposes of this, that they're going to do something with Nintendo again this year, kind of because, you know, there was kind of on two-year cycles, like 2005 was the original Strikers, 2007 was the next Strikers, and 2009 was Punch-Out. So we're kind of due for something with them and Nintendo, but I hope so, because they had pretty much a year of hell last year. They produced some really widely derided games.
Oh, yes.
The War for Cybertron, like, Wii spin-off that was a rail shooter that just got unloaded on by reviewers. And then there was that Ghost Recon thing.
Oh, the other rail shooter.
That also just got completely panned. You know, they had a real rough year doing contract work for other developers and stuff, so I think they can have a bit of a return to form here with something for Nintendo in 2011.
Well, what do you think that would be?
As to what it could be, it's tough. I mean, we've already got Sports Mix, Mario Sports Mix, coming in February, very soon, which is a Square Enix game, developed a game.
For some reason.
Well, they did the basketball one for DS a few years ago. Like, some reason,
great success that was.
Some reason they've gone back to the well on that. But so you've got that, and they have, you know, hit the Mario Sports pretty hard in the past. But I kind of struggled to see like another Strikers. Let's just say, for the hell of it, our favourite prediction that we always like to trot out now and again or wish is that the fabled Mario American football game they could perhaps be making.
Is that not one of the games in Sports Mix?
No. Okay. You've got like hockey and volleyball and basketball and something else because it's four, but it's not American football.
Now, do you think Brett Favre will be on the cover?
No. He probably should be.
The pictures might not be what you expect, though.
Yeah, they could end up bumping up the Peggy rating over here, possibly.
Yeah, it's hockey, basketball, volleyball, and then Waluigi apparently jumping over a shell, at least according to all this art.
Okay. But yeah, maybe something like that, they could go back to this kind of thing that they'd be comfortable with, and it's one of the few things that Mario Sports hasn't ventured into yet, so I'll go with that. But definitely I hope they can get the bad taste out of their mouth from 2010, because it was rough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, it's five-ish. It's volleyball, field hockey, ice hockey, dodgeball, and street basketball. Nice selection, Square Enix. Nice. Nicely done.
John, do you have a prediction in mind? You seem lost in thought. So.
No, I do. Actually, I predict that the 3DS, by the end of the year, I think the 3DS will have Netflix streaming. On Wi-Fi, though. Only on Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, sure. I don't know what else, because it doesn't have a cell connection. But
yeah.
Only through brainwaves.
I think you're right. And I don't know that it'll be a great device for that. Although it could, if Netflix wants to get into like 3D movie streaming, then that would be a natural pick.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's in the cards or not, but it just in terms of, I mean, they do seem to be pushing Netflix on every device. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe if you've already got an iPad or an iPhone, then you don't really want to watch it on your 3DS. But if you think about, you know, kids who might not have those devices, or people like me who I don't even have a smartphone. So I would love to have a portable Netflix device, because I'm a Netflix junkie anyway. And I've already got it on every console and computer in my apartment. It'd be great to have it on a handheld device. I think you're onto something there.
Well, the numbers suggest that there's a really pretty good uptake of it on Wii. You know, even though the Wii's right. got like lots of limitations and it's not the same quality as the HD systems, it still gets picked up. So you might, on one hand, you might say, "Oh, 3DS, you know, the fidelity won't be that great," but you've got the 3D effect, and it seems like people will use that facility if they've got the chance.
And we watched movie trailers on it. I mean, it seemed to work reasonably well.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that might interfere with Netflix being on 3DS is if Nintendo has some kind of bizarro plan to do their own video service.
God.
And, well, I mean, that stuff at E3 did indicate that they might be trying to work out some deals with movie studios to do that. I would prefer that they leave it up to the professionals at Netflix.
Now,
but...
in Japan, did they have that game room service where people could watch videos?
There's that Mina no Wii.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see. But, okay. James, do you have a prediction you'd like to put out there?
Can I throw out that Pikmin 3 still dead?
Okay,
sticking Bastille back in the horse.
Well, to be fair, it's been a good prediction to me for the past few years. So I think what we're going to run into is Nintendo having to make the decision on whether or not they want to publish a lot of games like for the Wii that are currently not or in the doldrums, as it were, in terms of Wii and DS releases. If they want to be the ones who publish them outside of Japan. So I watched the live Last Story event.
The big event. It was a big deal.
Let me put it this way. Iwata called Sakaguchi that morning from Kyoto. So the event was in Tokyo. He called him from Kyoto, basically telling him not to screw this up, and then took the train to go to Tokyo to surprise him live on the event. So Iwata just walked out on stage, and the producers of the game almost died. Like, they were in the middle of a multiplayer game, and he just walked out on stage and hi. And they lost their shit. So the game obviously matters to Nintendo a lot. I think the fact that they've been, you know, hand-feeding this game for years now, I think that game will come to the Western markets. I mean, what I saw, the game is actually... besides the character designs, which are asinine, the game itself feels more like a Western RPG. It's very action-oriented, strategy, tactics. The premise, as Sakaguchi discussed it, is that there's more than one way to win the battles in this game, and none of them are clicking A in menus.
Hmm.
I mean, if you watched the combat in the game, there was a lot of characters hiding behind things to try to get the jump on enemies.
Cover kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Cover, stealth, ranged attacks, and then closing in quickly to try to finish them off. The multiplayer seemed very oriented towards Western tastes, not so much towards Japan.
So then your prediction is Last Story will come to the U.S.?
I think it'll come to Western markets, and it might actually do better here than it does in Japan.
Huh.
Because okay. I think it's actually better tuned to Western tastes.
But in an absolute sense or relative sense?
Relative.
Right.
I think in Japan it will do reasonably well just because of the cachet on it. But I think it will be surprisingly better relative to expectations in Western markets.
Okay, so I have a couple. First off, I think Vitality Sensor will not be spoken of this year.
I hope you're wrong.
I think it's been filed away as...
Terrible idea.
Yeah. I think it will eventually be incorporated into something else. Rather than ship it as its own accessory for Wii, they'll either hold it for the next console or they'll build it into another controller.
Oh, God.
So that it's not just that, you know?
Right.
So I think it'll eventually become a feature of something else rather than its own standalone type thing. Because clearly it's hard for them to really get people excited about it. And from a gameplay sense, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And I think at this point, they might be thinking that it's maybe too late to try to, you know, after Wii Fit, maybe they feel like it's kind of hard to convince everyone that they should drag out their Wiis all over again to get in better health.
I think if they had shown it not in such an abstract sense of, look at this damn thing.
It was very much unlike them.
It was a horrible way to show that technology off.
Yeah, it wasn't tied to anything.
Because, normally it's very much like, you know, as we've talked about in more general terms, this accessory equals this game. And they don't really go that far beyond it a lot of the time. But certainly when it's introduced to the public imagination...
In the West.
It's really closely tied with the software. And, of course, it wasn't at all. Iwata has given some vague... descriptions about the kind of thing they're looking at, like, you know, it's about relaxing, basically, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. Relax. I mean, maybe it could come out only for like Japan or something. I mean, like, if it's more attuned to Japan's lifestyle concerns.
In Ubisoft's Cavalcade of Stupid, that was their press event at E3 2010. Oh, they had their dumb thing, the Energy, Innergy.
Yeah, they should build that into the laser tag gun.
Battle tag.
So, I mean, Nintendo almost never completely cancels something. Usually what they do, I mean, and you saw this for years with 64DD and Stage Debut and all that kind of stuff. Kirby's Tilt and Roll for GameCube.
Mario
128. They show these things before they're ready. I don't know why they show them, but they do. And then they'd never release it in that form, but they cut it up and they use pieces of it in other things. And I think ultimately that's probably what's going to happen with Vitality Sensor. When they release it, I don't think they're going to call it the Vitality Sensor. And it may not be a standalone product, but I think it will eventually come out. But it might be a while. It might be a few years. I don't know.
So you're not going to say that we might end up with Wii Remote plus Vitality now, right?
No. I don't really see Wii Relax coming out this year.
Well, I suppose it raises the question, you know, every year they've got the Wii branded games, the games that reach out to, you know, a particular kind of audience. Here we had Wii Party last year. So what would it be, do you think?
If you recall, I stopped predicting these last year because I always got them terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue to stop predicting them.
Wii Party is, I think, even less successful than Wii Music. It hasn't been a big sales success, so I think they might be re-examining that strategy.
And, yeah. But they keep telling us, they keep warning us almost that they still believe in Wii Music and that it could be reintroduced.
Yeah, maybe that comes back this year. I'm not predicting anything on that.
I think there will be a sequel this year.
I'm sort of dreading
Wii Music. I think it'll be
but
more.
But you get to play as a cat suit instead of a dog suit.
I think it'll be more instructional than the other one. It'll be less of a toy and more of kind of an instruction tool.
I'm pretty sure there's already a cat suit in the original Wii Music.
Yeah.
Well, I'm suddenly intrigued. Well, I think it will probably be called Wii Music Plus, I assume, based on previous experience.
Wii Music Plus a game.
The big thing is, I think, you know, you saw with Wii Party even, you know, what Wii Music Plus or whatever it would be won't get is like the big platform. You know, if it exists, it won't get the big treatment, like be like the holiday game or one of the holiday games. Yeah. It'll be, you know, a bit more of a sideshow type thing that they hope they'll turn a tidy profit.
You know, that sort of begs the question of what is the big holiday game? Do we think it's Zelda, or do we think Zelda might come out earlier and leave that space open?
I think Zelda's summer.
So here's the arc of Zelda as a game. It was, it's mostly done. We just need to pick the graphic style, which makes no sense as a statement. And, and then it was, it's about 50% done. So it's gone backwards.
Well, we said over half.
Over
just
half.
To be clear.
Yeah,
he said over, which it probably doesn't mean it's 99% done.
No, it probably means it's 51% done.
But he did say over half. That's an indeterminate kind of range. Yeah. I mean, I kind of struggle seeing it as the big holiday game.
No, I don't think so either.
For whatever reason now, I'm not sure it fits the sort of games that they've had in that spot for quite a while.
It doesn't have the appeal of the Mario game.
Like, we've had Mario Galaxy, we've had Wii Music and Animal Crossing, we've had Donkey Kong,
we've had New
Super Mario Brothers.
Kirby.
Zelda, I feel like it'll probably either come out maybe in that sort of summer kind of period that Galaxy 2 did, or possibly, if it's really beset with problems, it could either go into 2012. But I just... I suppose the real question is, though, do they have something else that will fit in that slot for Wii?
It's hard for me to imagine any Wii games coming out in 2012.
Well, that leads
That's
on to the console conversation.
I mean, but let's just put it this way. We didn't know about Kirby or Donkey Kong Country Returns until June.
And there'll be, though. There'll be more games like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable to assume they may not have even taken the cover off what is their big game. But I see what Greg's saying, because Zelda as a title is a bit more niche than those games, because there's more going on. It's not.
And the question is, you know, how are they going to try and sell it?
They're going to show the Miyamoto demo from
E3. Well, like, they do, you know, like Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks subsequent to that were an attempt to rekindle the flame in Japan of Zelda. controller and to broaden it out to a new audience. You know, these motion controls with Wii Motion Plus, I mean, maybe they make it more accessible, but I
kind of feel like it does the opposite. It makes it more difficult.
You have to be,
careful. More technical.
As someone who has played Zelda games from being a small child, it's very difficult for me to put myself in the place of someone coming to it from completely the outside. And what's more approachable, you know, the old Ocarina of Time style or Wii Sports Resort style.
It goes back to the stupid press questions that we got at the event. How's this compared to regular Zelda?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it became a lot less of a mainstream game as soon as it went 3D as a series.
It just became more difficult to conceptualize for the average player.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, for a broad audience, a truly broad audience, not a Nintendo audience or fans of the franchise audience, who will play whatever they put out.
Right. It's hard to explain in a 30-second commercial what a Zelda game is.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't see it as a holiday game anymore. I really don't.
And, you know, and I do think you see this sense from Nintendo that they want to sort of restore Zelda's preeminence as a really top-tier franchise. And I'm not sure that putting it up against Gears of War 3 and what does Sony have this...
Uncharted 3.
Uncharted 3, yeah. I don't know that Nintendo wants to draw direct comparisons between Zelda and those franchises. I'm not saying Zelda will be worse than those games. I'm really excited for it. But when you look at the sort of cross-media press and zeitgeist, maybe it's better to release Zelda in August and let people enjoy it for being a Zelda game, not for being the big holiday release that's competing with your time and money against...
I mean, the question for me is going to be, do they have it ready in time? But I feel like it will probably be a post-E3 kind of window. Where they wanted to release Other M before it got bumped out of July. So, you know, you're going to have the big blowout at E3 and build the hype, and then it's out like a month later. I mean, that, I think, is more the kind of venue that I see Zelda in now, to be honest. But again, if that's the new target, will I hit it?
Will it be done?
Well, the tale of this game's development indicates that its development cycle has been unusual.
Yeah, a tea table was flipped, to use the term.
And people probably coming in and out from like the handheld team, you know, at EAD. Yeah. And there's probably been a lot of turnover.
I think the GDC postmortem next year on Skyward Sword is going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So to put myself on the record, I'm going to say, I'm going to go with the summer. James could cackle at me later.
John already said that as well.
I'm thinking summer, possibly July.
I'm thinking October at the latest, but probably more like August or September.
The Metroid slot.
Yeah, I mean, September would be later than that, but there aren't too many big games that come out in September. So November is really going to be insane this year, especially if all those games that were shown at, I say shown, all those games that were teased at the Spike Awards, if they're all actually released in November, then I wouldn't want to put my game anywhere near that month.
Because again, as we've said, Zelda has an appeal to people who own a Wii but don't play it very often. And there is a risk that if you put it up against, you know, some of those games, that they might just not make the effort to quote-unquote dust off their Wii and play it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Mass Effect 3 is also coming out, right?
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of stuff. There's the new Elder Scrolls
of Blue, Skyrim or whatever.
I'm sure Zelda is going to do well, you know, a lot of different times of the year, but it's about maximization. You know, and that there's bound to be some sort of impinging.
There's always the burn, though, you know, the slow burn process.
Yeah, there is, But I suppose when we consider the issue of the tail, that comes back again to how long is the Wii going to continue to be supported wholeheartedly by Nintendo.
You know, I'm not sure that Zelda's going to do all that well in sales. I mean, based on what they've shown so far, I don't think they have yet convinced the non-diehard Nintendo fans why they need to be really excited about it. And if you think about it, it'll have been about 5 years since the last Zelda game. So I think it has fallen out of the general consciousness to a large degree. And frankly, at this point, it's hard for even Nintendo to sell a lot of titles on Wii. Yeah. I mean, Donkey Kong and Kirby did not light up the NPD charts. And You know, and they really haven't had, and Metroid certainly didn't. They haven't, and no, Galaxy 2 did okay. It did about as well as the first one.
It did pretty well, yeah.
It did pretty well, but not a massive success.
Not new Super Mario Brothers. Not, that's the nuclear one, the old, or Wii right. Sports Resort. You know, those are the big ones.
Yeah, and Zelda is a much more, it's not more niche, but it's certainly a more complex and intimidating game.
There's no way he's going to compete with those. I mean, just,
No, but Nintendo wants to compete with, I mean, Nintendo wants to recreate that level of success, and I don't think they're going to do it with Zelda. I don't know if they can do it with anything at this point, but because of that, I don't know that they're going to do Zelda in November, and regardless of when they release Zelda, I think it's going to sell a few million copies, but it may not even do as well as Twilight Princess.
But Twilight Princess had the benefit of coming out on its own.
It was on two systems.
Yeah, right around
launch. It was on two systems. It was a launch title, yeah. I mean, but I mean, if you look at the installed base now for Wii, it would be a shame if Skyward Sword didn't outsell Twilight Princess. And yet, I feel like that's a distinct possibility.
I think it's got, you know, it has more to deal with. It's got platform, not apathy, just exhaustion to go on. And yeah, the competition when Twilight Princess came out was bad.
Yeah,
I mean, we had that Far Cry game.
Well, what do you think about any predictions in terms of the content of the game?
I still think there's at least one really interesting thing about Zelda that they haven't shown yet, and I don't know quite what that will be. But
they've shown so little. I mean, really. I mean,
we saw a section of game that does not exist. I mean,
look, they have shown the core concept, which is Zelda with Motion Plus.
Right. Yeah.
And all the items and all the combat and most of the puzzles will revolve around that. So even though, maybe the stuff they've shown us might not even be in the final game, I still think they've shown a lot for Nintendo in terms of they have shown us the general idea of it. And I don't think that's going to change.
But my feeling is, you know, and I think this is probably where a lot of Zelda fans are, is structurally, what are we going to get significant changes? And the only hints that we've had don't come from the E3 demo, obviously, because that is just, you know, very much looking at the core gameplay. But in interviews, Onuma has discussed increasing the density of the gameplay and mixing dungeon and field, you know, the overworld, to a greater extent rather than having them be so separate and discrete as they've been in other Zelda games. Those are intriguing ideas to me. I mean, certainly after Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, I'm up for it being more dense. I think there's a lot of padding and just uninvolved sections to those games. Just trekking through the forest in Twilight Princess, you know, like three times it felt like, or, you know, sailing in Wind Waker. I'm really up for compressing Zelda, trimming the fat.
Well, it sounds like it may be almost more of a sandbox game or more open world rather than having these fenced in areas.
Well, I mean, in terms of trying to mix dungeon and field, maybe, but open world says sparse to me.
You see, I'm going back to, Onuma's not obviously not directing this game. Hidemaru Fubayashi from Capcom Flagship is.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
Onuma's basically been in his position so long now that he's essentially moved into that senior cast where he doesn't direct individual games.
Right. Like Miyamoto did once upon a time.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back and look to the fact that he was the director of the Oracle games and Four Swords and Minish Cap and say, well, what did Minish Cap do? Because that was the game they had the most control over. Well, the Minish Cap, and to a lesser extent, the Oracle games, every area of the world had stuff you had to do to get through it. I mean, there were puzzles just in the overworld you had to solve just to get from place to place. They used the game's mechanics to let you get through areas. So, like, there were parts in there you had to shrink down just to pass through this part of the forest.
Yeah, environmental puzzles related to that.
As opposed to just being puzzles in the dungeons and then go from A to B to C to D, just hoof it. I feel like if he pulls from that, we're more likely to see a situation where the overworld has stuff you have to do to get around too. It's not just get on the horse and go.
Or maybe even, you know, boss fights, or, you know, again, I mean, I think it would be nice to have boss fights that are a bit less telegraphed, a bit more sudden perhaps, than just like, well, I'm opening the big door with the big key now, so I'm guessing there's going to be a boss fight.
Yeah, we discussed this in the past. Any kind of expansion on what they did in the overland battles, the scripted events of Twilight Princess would be great, as long as they're not just ride around on a circle on a horse and hit things with a sword.
But I mean, with the nuance of the controls, perhaps you really could make that sort of thing, you know, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see something like, just in terms of, you know, overall gameplay, you could see something like he earns wings and goes back up into the clouds and flies around or something like that.
Yeah, well, the whole sky theme and the two different worlds, you know, the floating world and the world below. It's going to be another case of Zelda duality, it would seem.
Well, it's the kind of thing that would be different enough.
Yeah, so apparently Fujibayashi was actually the co-director on the DS games too.
Yeah, that's right.
So Nintendo hired him away when they shut down Flagship.
Yeah. Well, it's time for more predictions. I have one for 3DS. I think by the end of 2011, not only will we all, I mean, I think we all already expect that there will be a 3DS Lite at some point, but I think by the end of 2011, we'll all be ready for it. Because I don't know if you guys have seen the photos and video of the 3DS that was apparently pulled off of the assembly line in China.
Mm.
It looks, you know, pretty much like the one that we played at E3. It's no major differences.
Except there's not a model tethered to it.
Right. It's kind of an ugly system. The whole, like, three-tiered thing, the top lid doesn't really sit flush on the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Parts are raised that seems like they shouldn't be raised. They should be just flush with everything else. I think we will be all kind of excited for the possibility of a streamlined, better version of it by the end of this year.
You all might be, but remember, I had the DS fat forever.
So. Oh, yeah, James. James, this residue.
The biggest thing they could do for me is make those screens larger. Because, I mean, I'm going from an XL to this thing. I'm going to be downgrading.
Yep.
A lot.
Yeah, and they may well do that.
I'm going to be downgrading by the size of a baseball diamond.
What would really be interesting is if in upgrading the hardware, say, 2-3 years down the line, if they can actually augment the 3D effect and give you maybe finer control of that slider, or even let you kind of pull the layers out even farther apart than the original 3DS without requiring any new programming. That seems maybe possible, given the technology.
There's no reason why they couldn't increase the effect by altering the parallax barrier. Now, what you might do is you might actually lose some level of control. Because it might be bigger jumps, but the physics of it, there's no reason why it wouldn't work.
Well, anyway, I predict that the 3DS will not have friend codes.
Oh.
We should all, I mean, I wish we already knew that. We'll know this one probably within a couple of weeks, but
I hope so.
Yeah, I'm going to just say that right now, and we can revisit this in a couple episodes.
And be wrong.
We should know by then, but I feel like they've gotten the message. I mean, with, you know, obviously with DS and Wii, there's not much they can do to go back and fix it on those systems. But with 3DS, this is their chance. I'm sure there will be some at least modest improvements in the online architecture, but I think this is a big one. They'll tie it to some kind of account. You know, it's still got parental controls anyway. So I think we all agree that the friend code system is not really effective at the original goal, which was to sort of protect kids from predators or something. I guess it does that, but it protects you also from playing games online.
Yeah. From everybody.
So
I just feel like Nintendo's going to be very hesitant to be able to be Fox Newsed. But then again, they don't care about accuracy.
They're going to be anyway with the 3D effect on optical health and...
Yeah, it's already hurting children.
It's already been ridiculous. There was ridiculous news stories about, like, Animal Crossing and stuff, even though, like, some of the stuff they're talking about is basically impossible.
Well,
I mean,
to be fair,
can't conduct yourself on
I've heard that if you look at the 3DS, it turns you to stone.
Well, if you play Kid Icarus.
Did encourage me to find ways to engage in psychological warfare on people. I mean,
I'll just say, if you're going to base your practices on the basis of what minimizes frivolous news stories, that's probably a losing battle.
Yeah, but the problem is that they kind of do.
Well, they're cautious. I mean, look at the example with the eye, you know, with the vision stuff. You know, they're kind of out in front saying, oh, you might want to not let your under 6-year-old play it very much or whatever, when even in the medical community is not really thought to be that risky, but you know, they're just playing it safe. So my 3DS sort of related prediction, first of all, kind of linking back to what we were talking about with the whole holiday game thing, I think part of the sort of solution is going to be that Nintendo's big holiday game will be a 3DS game. Yeah, there may not really be like a Wii game that's like obviously the one, because I think by the time we come to the end of 2011, this is where they're going to really make the hard sell to get people on board that have been holding out, you know, and it is probably going to be a pretty expensive product. There will probably be some people who might think, oh, well, right now it's remakes and whatnot. You know, they don't jump over immediately. Maybe they need to, you know, store away some more cash. But in the holiday, they're going to want to have something that's going to get people on board. I think it's going to be Mario. Probably another new Super Mario Brothers type thing for the holiday this year.
For 3DS,
yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, it's one of those games that you'd like to get out early because you know it's going to sell for years and years and years. So the earlier you put it out, the more it's going to sell.
We do know there's the Paper Mario game.
There is that, yeah. And I'm not sure how soon we expect that. Obviously, it's not in the real first wave.
We saw some faked video. I mean, what I would be kind of expecting is something more akin to Wario Land on the Virtual Boy.
Yes.
That kind of gameplay.
But it won't be Wario, it'll be Mario.
Maybe I would be very happy if they did a Wario Land just like the Virtual Boy one.
Me too.
It sounds cool to me, but I mean, I'm thinking as a big holiday game, you know, it'd be a Mario thing. Whether, you know, it's got to come together, I guess. You know, the question is, can they knock it up in time? I mean, it will be 2 years on from New Super Mario Bros. Wii at that point, so I don't think that's unreasonable. At that would push a lot of people over the edge, not just, you know, like maybe Nintendo fans who are holding out a little bit. Yeah, because I didn't buy a DS straight away. I waited until the really good games started showing up, like Canvas Curse and stuff. Yeah. And so there's probably going to be a lot of people in a similar position, and Mario would not only push them over the edge, but a lot of the people that have got into Mario with the one on Wii and the original DS.
Well, you could then, you know, follow it up with the 1-2 punch with like Mario Kart next year.
That could be the game. I mean, that to be fair. I mean, we already know Mario Kart's coming, so that might function in the same way. And there's so many on DS and Wii. So I think if they don't have a new Super Mario Brothers ready, then you can just kick Mario Kart back into that slot.
Yeah. Well, John looked up Mario Kart Wii on Wikipedia, and at least according to this article, they've sold 24 million copies of Mario Kart Wii.
It's ridiculous. It's massive. Yeah.
It's the highest selling game on the system after Wii Sports and Wii Play.
I mean, I think New Super Mario Brothers might be on pace to beat it, but it might slow down, you know, because it's later on in the system's life.
Right. Now, my Wii prediction is that I think we'll see Dragon Quest X released in Japan at the end of this year, and then we'll see a stateside release probably about March or April of next year.
I hope you're right. But,
Summertime is Dragon Quest time.
Yeah, they usually traditionally release those in the summer.
I think we're about to hear quite a lot more about it.
Yeah, and if we do hear a lot more about it, that means it's coming out this year.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to tease it like more than a year in advance. They're just not.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I agree. I think we're about to hear more about Dragon Quest X, and it's exciting. And by the way, we haven't mentioned it, but Nintendo's publishing Dragon Quest VI for DS in February. I am thrilled. I'm really thrilled. I cannot wait for that. I'm so glad they finally confirmed that.
When was that in Japan?
It was about a year ago. It was the start of 2010.
Okay, so it wasn't like one of those, all right, we're going to sit on it for 3 years things.
No. It's very similar gap, very similar lag as DQ9, about a year.
All right, anyone got any remaining predictions they want to pop out?
We're going to be wrong on 90% of this.
That's pretty safe. I feel that we will not get a lot of stuff about the new Nintendo console this year. Maybe nothing at all, and we certainly won't get released anywhere.
No, it's not coming out this year.
My feeling is that provided that everything goes as well with 3DS as they want it to, given that it's coming out at a console kind of price point, I don't think they're going to be talking about a new console just yet.
I mean, I wouldn't think that we'll really see anything concrete about the next console until probably next year's E3.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like the Wii is in its last, really on its last legs. I think this year will be like the last hurrah, and then next year is kind of when people will be like kind of looking around saying, hey, what's going on with that next console?
I mean, it might look sparse now, but as we know, there will be the revelation of some games we don't know about, and it won't look so bad.
Yeah, but for third parties?
Yeah, I just think that Dragon Quest X, like the Dragon Quest games on consoles are always like the last games to come out in, like,
that's right,
on those consoles. typically. Like, they come out in, like, the last year of the lifetime or, like, the year after everybody thought it's already dead.
So to John's point, are you expecting the E3-style announcement we had for the, quote, revolution this year?
I'm not.
It exists.
Not at E3.
No, I think that's the kind of thing that Nintendo had to do back when they were playing from behind. That is not the sort of thing they're going to do anymore.
So I had that prediction last year that, and that it was really a wish that Nintendo would announce the Wii successor, which, by the way, I will predict is going to be called the Super Wii. I think it's a very natural evolution of the name. That sounds better than Wii 2, and it means they don't have to create another absurd word from nothing. And it dredges up people's memories of Super Nintendo. So I think Super Wii is a pretty good bet. But last year, I was kind of hoping that they would say something after Christmas, even though I didn't think it was all that realistic. This year, I think it's actually realistic that we will start to hear mumblings, either, if not out of Nintendo, then something published in, like, the Nikkei news in Japan.
Yeah.
Because they seem to have some insiders.
If we think of the 3DS kind of model, if you like, you know, the 3DS timeline, then, you know, either really late in 2011 or early in 2012,
right,
you get the sort of the preamble and then some sort of revelation at the 2012 E3. But this year, I just think the 3DS is going to be very console-like.
Yeah, they're pretty much already launching a new console this year.
I mean, the price of the unit is going to be console-like. The price of the games is going to be closer to consoles, I assure you of that.
It will probably be the most expensive gaming system on the market when it comes out.
At an entry level, yeah. I mean, maybe if you buy, like, the most premium SKU of, like, one of the HD ones, maybe that would be more. But, yeah, it's certainly entry level is going to be the most expensive. Like I said, those games will cost more than $30. Guaranteed.
Yeah, and the way PS3 sales have gone, that's probably looking at a drop pretty soon to 250.
Yeah, it's that was tough this year for PS3. It's almost sad actually that in the end PS3 did get pipped even in Japan by the Wii.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like Wii seemed like it was finally going to dip, but it didn't.
That PSP still going strong in Japan. Why? Monster Hunter.
But even the PSP got pipped by the DS in the end as well. Oh.
Did it right at the end? I thought it beat it.
No, it didn't. 2010 DS still outsold PSP, even after all this time.
Nice.
That's gotta be depressing.
Not that the PSP leading Japan in is not ridiculous by any stretch. I mean, it's not really, but in the big scheme of things worldwide, it still amazes me that anybody cares.
Yeah, but Sony may well drop it soon. So, I mean, that's the point. I mean, DS is going to go on. You know, and DS is going to be their sort of more classical kind of portable niche in terms of how it generates revenue for them, you know, from kids and, you know, casual players and the long tail sales of the library games. And 3DS is going to be very much more console-like and very different even from Wii in terms of you might well have a vibrant third-party scene as well. So I don't know that they have to worry too much about new consoles or what's the big holiday game for Wii or this, that, and the other. If 3DS is everything they want it to be.
Here's a question, then. We have pretty solid confirmation there is a PSP 2.
Yep.
That it exists. But what the hell is Sony going to do to save handheld gaming for them as a company?
I imagine it'll probably be something to do with, like, making it even more integrated with the PS3.
How is that a winning strategy?
That's always Sony's idea, is to make all of their stuff more integrated.
Yeah, they're mini discs. Fuck.
Well, they want everything in your house to be Sony.
Actually, this begs an interesting question. Do you guys think Nintendo will find a way to make 3DS compatible with Wii? Can they do, like, a firmware update for Wii that lets it talk to the 3DS?
Well, if it's a Bluetooth device, they can just have it say whatever the hell they want it to say.
Think so, but it's just like they've been so poor about expanding the Wii's possibilities over time with firmware. And if, you know, we talked about the WiiWare file size limit already, you know, last week, that apparently that is immovable. And especially when you consider how bafflingly little they've made of the connectivity between DS and Wii, it just seemed like a weird place to start now.
Well, questions like that, I ask myself, is that something that Sony would do? And then I say, okay, that won't happen. Because things like that, that's something that Sony would think.
Remote play is not happening. Yeah. We're buying all those Super NES games again in 3D.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. And you're paying more for them because they've 3D'd them.
It's value added.
Like, whenever you have any idea, just think if Sony would think it was cool and they would do it. Just don't do it.
Well, see, here's how they could do it, though. It doesn't really matter if the Wii knows what the hell a 3DS is. Mm-hmm. All that matters is that 3DS talks to Wii in a language the Wii knows. So they could conceivably just construct essentially what is give the 3DS its own personal translator to talk to the Wii. It's just talk to the Wii like you're a DS. Wii doesn't care. And yeah. I mean, they could game their own system. Pun not intended.
They might do it that way.
I mean, they're using the same standard. It's not like when we had the GBA where they had a fucking link cable you had to plug into the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always think about, like, you know, how the Wii can broadcast DS demos to the DS. But, of course, with 3DS, you won't need that because every 3DS can go online and do that on its own because it has a browser.
Yeah.
Whereas the original DS didn't have that.
What's more strange to me, personally, is that the 3DS as a device, we conceive it will have demo downloading like the Wii does for DS. But can we really be sure of that? Because, I mean, the DSi doesn't. And I think
there have been very strong suggestions from Iwata that it's going to go significantly beyond anything on Wii. They're going to try and do it right this time. You know, integrate demos, promotion at the point of sale.
Which
it's got to be done. And they've said that.
I think Xbox Live has a huge effect on that because they see how much money Microsoft is making.
But here's the problem. We have, how big was it? Was up to 10 gigabytes is the size of a 3DS cartridge?
Is it 8? I think 8.
Those demos are going to be sizable pieces of stuff.
Well, but you've got a minimum of 2 gigs with the SD card.
Right.
And that's expandable.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's...
Well, they'll probably have limits on it as well, you know.
Your demo has to be 40 megabytes. Figure it out.
Probably still have some, like, stuff that kind of... You know, it isn't going to be the free-for-all that you have with, you know, like, some of the demos I've downloaded for PS3 are just huge, but, I mean, even they are, like, 2 gigs or whatever for a HD game, so...
2 gigs? Holy shit!
Yeah, I would have thought it's doable to get something that could work in the context of a 3DS game. But the main thing is that they want to have the demos ready for the downloadable games.
See, my concern was more based on having gotten demos off Xbox Live, which the biggest I've ever seen was 1.2 gig. And you tell me there's 2 gig PS2 demos.
Oh, 2.3. It's massive.
Oh, my God.
Well, James, I don't know if you know this, but PS3 games leverage the power of Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to use compression at all.
Yeah, that is not really a concern.
Okay, well, before we wrap up, let's go around and talk about our most anticipated games, or maybe even a non-game this year.
we're looking forward to.
Yeah, I think all four of us are excited about Zelda, so maybe we can just forego that.
Yeah. Zelda, man.
So I'll start, and mine is maybe a little more obscure, but I'm going with Monster Tail for DS.
Oh, snap! You got me.
Did I steal you?
I had that. Yeah, big time.
I played it at E3 last year, and I was very happy with what I played.
I know. That's one of the... I mean, obviously, it's the Hatsworth guys.
It's the Hatsworth guys, yeah.
But, yeah, Johnny had great things to say about it. You know, it sounds like a very Super Nintendo-like game, but you've got this weird, like, pet thing going on the lower screen,
and it's Metroid with the map and everything.
Yeah, it's an explorative kind of action game. Sounds great. They're really looking forward to that.
The one thing that disturbs me is that it's Majesco publishing it, and well, look, I have no problem with Majesco per se, but we have seen that they don't seem to necessarily
know what the hell they're doing.
Give the games they publish the financial support they need to be great. And so I'm concerned about that. But, you know, Hatsworth was, what, pretty much made in people's spare time or something like that, so...
Yeah.
But it had EA behind it, though, didn't it?
Well, EA, they were EA employees, yeah.
That was pretty quietly pushed out there, you know.
They at least produced enough copies, which may be a Majesco problem.
It was a labor of love kind of thing, and obviously they've now left the confines of EA to strike out on their own, make games like this, so, you know, hopefully it won't affect the quality. Now, right. In terms of the amount of attention it gets...
Sure. Well, look, I don't expect it to be a big seller regardless, but I am a little concerned that Majesco might try to shove it out there before it's ready. But from those guys, based on what I played last year, it looks really good. John Lindemann.
Yeah, much like you, Johnny, I'm looking forward to Dragon Quest VI coming up soon.
Okay.
So, you know, I've been really interested in Dragon Quest, sort of a renaissance with Dragon Quest IX. I may just very well do a Dragon Quest back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back with all the remakes.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Because you know I got them in my backlog.
So, John, we'll get through that in 2072.
That's right. I'll get back to you right after. I think I'll start it right after I finish Chrono Trigger.
Yep. You will actually need a time machine to get through.
That's my roadmap.
John is the guru of time. He's playing Chrono Trigger right. At the end of time.
I'm just going to call him Balthazar. And, James, what's your sort of most anticipated right now?
Well, it was until about 2 hours ago, Ghost Trick. But
yeah, I was really looking forward. I've been looking forward to that.
You get the new Pokemon's coming out. So.
Yeah, but actually, I mean, if we get it, it's Last Story. But if we don't, Black and White looks really good. And I mean, there are a lot of 3DS games that I saw listed that, or even when I played them, I fell in love with immediately. But of course, part of that could just be that I was charmed by the wiles of the 3DS's magic. But I'm looking forward to the 3DS though, and I'm going to have one on launch day.
Greg, do you have anything other than Monster Tail?
Other than Monster Tail, other systems, Arkham City, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I enjoyed the first one, hopefully a better ending. And of course, Radiant Silver Gun, I'm looking forward to not being able to play.
Yeah.
Forgot
about that.
Killzone 3, you know it. You got to get, you know, the F-bombs and S-bombs.
Yeah, they have said they're going to tone it down. By the way, they have said that, but I mean, I just think Rico should, like, you know, start talking like Lovie Smith.
Sweet
Jiminy Christmas, Sev.
I just love it that there are people saying, oh, I just hope this character dies.
I can never remember the name of the studio, but I think probably sometime in 2011, we're going to find out what the former Retro Studios guys are working on.
Armature.
Yeah, Armature. And I'm really excited to see what that is.
Yeah, that's been a while. You can forget how long ago that was now that they set that up. So, yeah, I would hope, really, that we see something. Obviously, it's not really been the best time to have a startup game developer.
No, it's not. I have to say, I'm a little scared for them because I know what was going on at Retro before Nintendo stepped in and said, stop, don't make that, don't make that, don't make that, make this.
Yeah.
And I'm a little concerned that out of the cozy confines and in the relatively harsh economy, reality might set in.
We shall see, but look, the guys who left Retro to form Armature worked on at least 2.5 Metroid Prime games.
Oh, yeah.
This explains James' dismal view of them, then, doesn't it?
That's not that. It's more a concern that out there on their own, things might not go so well for them.
And you would not have chosen this.
No, this is the absolute worst time to go independent.
Oh, terrible.
All right, now we come to the end of the show. I hope everyone was interested in our predictions. Actually, how about this? If you don't like our predictions, or if you think we should be anticipating something that we didn't mention,
bite me.
Send us an email and we'll read it, because next week we are definitely diving back into the thick of listener mail. We've been collecting some stuff over the holidays, and we look forward to catching up on that. So the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And please, before you forget, fire off that email, because we are looking for some hot, hot, hot letters to read on the show.
Piping hot.
Piping hot. That's right. Hot, hot steam buns. What are they called? Hot cross buns. Hot cross buns. Of course, we have a couple of other excellent podcasts going on. There's a new episode of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with Michael T.Y.P. Cole and Pedro Hernandez. So check that out for sure. And then the newscast is going weekly in the new year.
Ooh.
So they just put up their, they had part two of their Game of the Year discussion. That's why we haven't talked about Game of the Year, because it took them two entire episodes just to cover their Game of the Year stuff. And we should mention, James has the entire NWR Game of the Year stuff up.
December 31st, fuckers.
That's right. It went up before the end of the year. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely do that.
At 6:02 p.m.
It represents what we all think, all of us.
That's right, except those of us who weren't there.
Yeah, but newscast is going weekly, so if you aren't subscribed yet, definitely do that. I'm really looking forward to. They're going to do kind of an alternating type format So every other week will be the way it has been in the past, and then they're going to fill in with other things. I guess it kind of remains to be seen exactly what's going to happen. But I do hear that they're going to be playing some and talking about some Donkey Kong Country 3 pretty soon. So you might want to check that out if you're interested in Greg's comments last week. And I will say I haven't mentioned this in a while, but I have been on some other podcasts over at Crosstalk lately that I would recommend to you. We had a really fun episode of Box Office Poison recently. That's where we talk about movies. And that's all the old RFN alumni, Carl, my...
Not all of them. Where's Evan? Where's Evan?
Evan is apparently... And I'm not joking. Evan is apparently living in a cabin out in the woods, and he doesn't have internet right now. So as soon as possible...
No.
I am actually hoping to drag Evan into civilization soon and make him do a podcast with me.
It puts the lotion on his skin or else it gets the hose again.
So anyway, my own show, the one that I edit and conceive of, is Discover Music Project. And I've been having a lot of fun with that.
I'll have to be on there.
Yeah. Oh, John, trust me. We're doing the prep right now for John to do a show. We're going to get some hip hop on, and then I'm going to play Stevie Wonder and show him where all the hip hop comes from.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't know.
So, John's older than Stevie Wonder. Come on.
And just as blind. Mm.
You had to go there, didn't you? You had to go. You think Stevie Wonder, what is the one thing about Stevie Wonder? A seminal musician or blind guy, and you went there.
Can't see me like Stevie.
So yeah, do check out
John Lindemann, ladies and gentlemen.
To hear those cool shows, I would appreciate it. Let me know what you think, seriously. So, let me just say, before we go, John, it has been a pleasure doing the show with you at my side. And I thank you for letting me stay with you a couple of nights here in Boston.
It has indeed been a pleasure.
Yeah, and I sincerely hope that we'll all be back here in Boston in a couple of months.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We are still waiting to hear about PAX East, but we do hope to have another live panel, and we should be finding out any day now. So actually, check us out on facebook.com/radiofornintendo, and as soon as I get the news, I'll put it up there. And then we'll probably have an article on the site, too, to help people find out how they can attend. But hopefully, cross your fingers, we're going to be there at PAX East. I really hope so.
And
I hope they'll have us back.
Keep in mind that registration for PAX East as an attendee does go up in price relatively soon. So
that's true.
If you're planning on going, you'd do it quick.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening. Sorry for the jokes. We'll be back next week. Bye, everyone.
Later.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm online now, so please add me to the call in the chat.
You're going to hear yourself over the call, though.
No. Oh, but I'm hearing myself through the webcam.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Maybe somebody should just go in the other room.
Yeah, finally together in separate rooms. Oh, it's like a Victorian marriage. Booyah! Take that, 19th century.
You showed them who's boss. Hey, you know who's boss? Cholera.
sanitation.
Here we go. Five. You don't have to clap, John. Five. Four.
I disagree. John does have to clap.
It's habit. I would have too if I had been. Okay. Five, four, three, two, one. John, don't. Yeah.
Don't clap, John. God.
Sit on your hands, because he even went before I did, and I'm the one calling it.
Look, I'll give Johnny credit. If you watched Harmony of Assets and didn't know what it was before you got there, you just walked up on the demo booth and it was staring you in the face.
Yeah.
You might start to perceive it's 2.5D as your brain slowly implodes.
I prefer Assets of Despair, personally.
Assets of Despair.
Assets of that's even better. Assets of Despair, yeah.
I think that's a pretty sure someone made that with Pamela Anderson once.
Don't diss Mike Hagar.
Mayor. But of all the random people they could have pulled out, Mike Hagar.
No, he's not random. He's awesome.
Yes, he is.
Out of the blue.
He's Jesse Ventura, basically.
He is.
He is spinning pile driver.
Yeah.
He's Jesse Ventura with more steroids.
He's spinning clothesline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the game comes out Tuesday, which hopefully I'll have the review out before then.
He spins a lot.
He does.
And
he's really into spinning.
Yep. He spins
a lot. He also spins yarn.
Yeah. And he spins like wicka, wicka, wicka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen him in clubs. The guy rips it up.
He spins.
I mean, the crowd's crazy.
All his moves involve spinning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of fist pumping.
Are we done?
Yeah.
You know, we're done.
Okay. What the fuck? What the fuck? That went on forever, too. It's like, God.
It's like a Family Guy joke.
It's certainly a game that's more geared for adults in terms of someone who's going to have a little bit more of a sophisticated approach, someone who's going to think through it a little more deliberately than a child would. So it's kind of interesting, you know? But, hold on. Fucking hell. I've literally got snot running down my face as I speak.
Coitus interruptus.
Want some medicine, Matt?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you!
What is so funny about that?
Medicine.
Why is it so good?
Why don't you get here and make some tea with some lemon?
This has all gone wrong.
Make you feel real nice.
I'm a good blower, right, John?
Absolutely.
By the way, we haven't done Now Playing yet.
I know.
Okay. Just a reminder to John.
Well, I've been doing Now Playing on time for years, James.
No, you haven't.
Are you kidding? I have ignored the first half of more podcasts to do Now Playing that you can even count.
Yeah, but that suggests, John, that suggests a certain rivalry from the point of view that if you weren't doing Now Playing, you would not be ignoring us.
Results.
Prior to Now Playing, evidence suggests it's not the case.
Hey. Look, when you want Now Playing done, it gets done, doesn't it?
No, because I've had to do it a bunch of weeks.
I'm not about process. I'm about results.
Wait, were you fucking Detective John Kimball?
Ask anybody.
I'll ask everybody,
As
John.
As director, I don't care about process. I care about results. If people get killed, doesn't matter.
All right, thanks for listening. Sorry for the jokes. We'll be back next week. Bye, everyone.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I regret nothing.
Wait, John. We got to clap. Okay. You don't clap.
No, for fuck's sake.
John, we got to clap.
He's moving the cursor to the stop button.
John, clap. Do it.
Yeah, he just did. Okay, what? Stop.
You're not helping, John.
Stop.
John just made it infinitely harder.
3, 2, 1
Jesus.
Now you can click the yellow square.
Yay, yellow square.